You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole, and I am just one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing. I'm so excited to have back with me the one, the only, Christy Morris. And her, what in the world is that behind you?
Don't mind him, that's just a friend of mine. Can you see him?
Oh, okay. I mean, I've never seen somebody behind you before. Is he always there?
Yeah, usually. Don't you have one?
Huh. I wonder why. Yeah, but he's invisible.
Oh, okay.
So, you know.
You probably trip over him a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm, a lot, yes. So, well, we are going to be diving into John Krasinski's third film as a director called If. But before we do that, just a huge thank you to everybody who's listening. It makes a big difference that you do. And it means a lot to us that you do. If you would like to help out the show, we would really appreciate it. You know, you can help the show be able to find more listeners by sharing us out on social media, where you can follow us at the 602 Club on X Twitter. You can also find us on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. We're online at trek.fm. You can find the entire network on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And you can join the listeners only discussion group. You can find conversation with people all over the world about our shows. Just type Babel into the search field on Facebook and you'll find us. And of course, if you like what we do here on the network, you can always go over to Patreon and become a patron of the network and help us make sure that all of the content we've got coming to you can continue over at patreon.com/trekfm. And last but not least, you know, again, if you really do like the show, hit us up with a star rating and review where you were listening to your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you can give star ratings. All of those things also help people to be able to find the show. Christy, I'm really interesting about this. We were kind of talking about this even before we started recording, this idea of this film, because it's not a movie based on a franchise. It's a completely new thing. And so kind of coming into this, like, what was it that had you excited for this film, or something that you thought, oh, I think I might want to see that?
Yeah, I remember seeing the preview for this and thinking at first it looked like a typical kids movie and maybe wouldn't be something I'd be interested in. But the more that they explained, which I think you kind of have to with this, that the short title IF actually was the acronym Imaginary Friend, and that it was playing with this idea that seems common for a lot of kids around the world, I was intrigued. And actually, if you look up the interview that John Krasinski did, funnily enough, it's the puppy interview with BuzzFeed, but he really got into detail about how he came up with the idea was by watching his girls play, just the two of them, and that it was this whole world that they've created with their imaginations that he couldn't be a part of. And that as they got older and, you know, the difficult things of life started to come in, that was disappearing some. And so he wanted them to know that this is something you could always revive again and come back to. And that just because maybe you don't need an imaginary friend anymore doesn't mean that you don't need to keep your childish enthusiasm and joy. And so I thought that was so beautiful that was the whole premise for him to make this.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the other two movies that Krasinski has done as director and somebody who, you know, also wrote the films were the first two Quiet Place movies, which completely different than this, you know, kind of almost within the horror genre in some ways, the alien horror genre. And so to have this, you know, be this very, it seemed like from the trailers and everything, very family-friendly film, really digging into the idea of, you know, all the things that we as kids and, you know, now adults, we remember as kids, you know, maybe possibly having an imaginary friend. And it looked incredibly whimsical to me. And, you know, having seen his other work as a director and liking it at a great deal. And I think also the thing that struck me is, about this before I even saw it was, okay, John Krasinski took a genre that I'm not a huge fan of, which is like this almost like horror-like genre, and he turned it into something incredibly poignant and so well done, so invested in the characters, you know, it'd be so much more about this character story with what this family is going through than really anything else. I was very excited then to see, okay, well, if he could do that with that, what could he then do with the family film, right? And so I was very much looking forward to this from the moment I saw the trailers. I thought it looked like so much fun and just something that I would probably really enjoy. And so I was very excited coming into this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of thinking about the movie and exactly in some ways what I was saying about Krasinski and what he brings to the movies to which he's been a part of so far, and now this one included, he's always, I think, finding the true depth of the story through the characters. And I was really struck by this movie because you don't really get it from the trailers that this would be a part of it. But I mean, like a lot of the good Disney movies from when we were kids, the old animated movies and even some of the live action movies they didn't, this movie is really all kind of about dealing with loss. And like you said as well, like how to deal with that in childhood. And so I was very much struck about, you know, this movie is pretty much like a meditation on loss, and how we deal with it and how we find a way to move on, especially when that loss is something that happens when we're younger. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I absolutely felt the same. I don't think in a good way that you get that vibe at all from the trailer, because I think, of course, you may not have watched it if it seemed like it was going to just be a sad movie. But also, this makes total sense because a lot of times in real life, what therapists have said is the reason kids have an imaginary friend is as a coping mechanism for some kind of trauma or maybe loneliness. Maybe they're an only child, and she was. And so it makes total sense in this case for her dealing with the loss of her mother and being an only child to need that as a means to get through it. And then also her way of dealing with it of bottling everything up and thinking, I just need to buck up and grow up. And her dad having to remind her that she is still a kid and that not everything in life has to be sad. You know, somehow you have to move on. I think that's an excellent lesson for kids, especially, and that this movie ends up being so deeply personal because he focuses on a couple of big themes and this being the biggest one.
I so agree with you because the whole idea of this film of having this young girl kind of rediscover her imaginary friends and friend specifically because she's in a place where the fear of loss has really reared its head again for her, you know, that with her father having to have surgery and be in the hospital, the same hospital that, you know, her mother passed away in. And, you know, she was young. She watched that happen. And so she's kind of internalized that pain. And one of the ways of doing that is almost in kind of, I think, pushing it aside and just saying that I need to grow up, like you said. And, you know, her father's whole goal in this movie, even while this is happening, is to help her see that it's okay to still be a kid when you're a kid. You don't have to try and grow up too fast. You can still enjoy it. There are still things in life to enjoy. And so I think it is incredibly healthy as a film for, you know, families to be able to watch, and especially kids to be able to watch, because to understand that life is full of incredibly sad things that happen, but life is also full of incredibly joyous things that happen. And learning to balance those is an important skill to learn, and how to deal with what happens that is bad and find a way to move on in a healthy way is also very important. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed the way in which this movie wanted to talk about those things and tackle those things. And it in some ways, you know, J.K. Rowling is famous for talking about with the Harry Potter series that it's really about death, right, and how we deal mm-hmm. with it. You know, obviously Harry's life is surrounded by it a lot. And so in some ways, B's life is also been surrounded by death, you know, from a very early age, watching her mother, you know, it looks like basically die of mm-hmm. cancer. And then having this scare with her father is incredibly difficult for her to deal with. And so I really liked that the movie was willing to be so much more than just a fun movie about kids and their imaginary friends. And because I think in some ways, I think as an adult too, it's an incredibly important message for us to remember that, you know, we're surrounded by bad things and death and frustration and fears and all of that, but to be reminded that there actually are good things out there is a really important thing for us to be reminded of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that it's so beautiful, especially how she even says as a character later in the movie, you just kept hugging me tighter and not letting it go and trying to remind me that I am still a kid. You know, that he was never going to give up on her, and trying to help her continue to see the joy in life and the beautiful things.
No, exactly. And I mean, you know, all of this talk about, you know, Bee's journey here as a child and the idea of childhood. I mean, the movie itself is clearly trying to remind us that, you know, there are things that we lose as we grow up, right? That we can't get back. But that there are some things that we shouldn't lose. A sense of wonder, joy, hope, fun, you know. And, you know, it's interesting to watch Bee already in the film be dealing with that isolation that you can feel. And especially as adults, I think that every single one of us in some way or another understands what that's like. To just feel like we're alone. You know, and I think the beauty of the film, especially when it showed with the reason that imaginary friends exist for kids, right, and the importance of them, is this thing that we all innately have a desire to have, which is that we want to be completely known and we want to be completely loved by somebody.
Yeah.
And I think that was an incredibly beautiful thing to see, right, in this movie, was the way in which all of these people that we kind of see get reacquainted with their imaginary friends as adults, that's what they were looking for. That's what they had created them for. And I think Krasinski has really tapped into something that is so essential to us as human beings. You know, it's something incredibly, I would say, even spiritual in that sense. Like, we want somebody to know us and love us. And those two things together, because without one or the other, you just kind of feel lost.
Yeah. And I mean, it even made me think about, too, in the scene, especially with Bee's grandmother dancing, almost from the movie Soul, you know, where it was like when someone found their thing, hers was dancing, and it just makes you light up and come alive in a way that nothing else does. And it's like you are in the zone kind of thing. And I love that they really highlight that here, with each person's being so unique to them, and that if you don't hit the exact right thing, then you're just not going to get through to them. I thought was so cool, because it is true. I mean, everyone has different things that drive them and really make them feel alive. And I like that they also really highlight how this is something you can't lose. Like you don't want to lose. I like the way that you put it, that we want to be fully known and fully loved, because I think about all of the kids who maybe didn't grow up with loving parents like Bee did. Who would they have? And so that's maybe why they might have an imaginary friend, is someone that they feel does love them and has their best interest at heart. And so in that sense, it's such a beautiful thing, because then you feel like you're getting that hug from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and, you know, you clearly see that with, you know, Blue's person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy, where, you know, that's, Jeremy is this incredibly kind of frantic person. Who you can tell has spent all of his life not feeling good enough or feeling as though he deserves, you know, anybody to be really good to him or kind to him.
Or to succeed.
You know, and to succeed, yes, exactly. In the moment that he has when he reconnects with Blue, and Blue just basically is telling him, you know, I'm here. I'm here with you. You're not alone. You know, I think that there's something so incredibly powerful about that whole idea, because that is what we're looking for, right? And, you know, I think there is in some ways a sense of sadness that people would have to make up that person
mm-hmm.
for them to feel that, you know, and that's what we are called to do. And so I think, you know, that's something that I loved about this film, and I thought was really great about it. I also thought, you know, I don't know if you saw this, so I'm really interested to see if you did, but, you know, in the movie, the way in which Bee is being raised, you know, she's being raised to be a child that has a lot of freedom to roam around New York City. She doesn't seem to really have social media or that kind of thing. She's not constantly on her phone. You know, what we're seeing here is the childhood in many ways has been lost, right? And it almost did feel like to me this movie was trying to remind everyone what childhood should be, where a child's cares are those things to which are happening to them in their you know, vicinity. They don't and shouldn't have to worry about the cares of the entire world, which are on this glowing box in their pocket, mm-hmm. you know, which, you know, kids have enough to deal with in learning that is hard enough, right? And so I didn't know if that was something that it was just something that I saw, or if you also felt like you saw that as well in the movie.
No, I did too. I feel like it was more subtle, but it was expressed in the sense of you don't see her using a phone. She's actually picking up, you know, pen and paper and drawing and, you know, talking about things like that. And then they even have Benjamin, the boy in the hospital, who jokes that he thinks his mom broke the TV,
exactly.
And he all he has is to play chess or to read. And
Or his own imagination, right?
And so I think in a subtle way, the movie is reminding you that there is this innocence that needs to be preserved in kids. And that not necessarily that all screens are bad, but that limiting screens so that kids are actually having to do things either with their imagination or outside or learning like chess is only a good thing. And I think that's a great reminder, and it doesn't feel like it's in your face.
Well, and I also think that it feels as this really important reminder of the things that are important, right? That the beauty and the importance of imagination for children is because it does allow them this ability to be in touch with a whole other side of life, right? Our imagination allows us to think creatively and to think of things that haven't been hopefully thought of before, right? That's where, you know, the greatest inventions come from, is somebody just being able to do that. And the way in which that we as human beings have that happen is by having that part of ourselves cultivated, you know? And we can only do that if we're not constantly being entertained. We can only do that if we're having those moments where our brain can just begin to wonder and to think about stuff. And I think that's exactly what we see in the film. And, you know, in some ways, I do almost think that this film is really a meditation on childhood as seen by John Krasinski, remembering what it was like for him to grow up as a child and what childhood was like for a lot of people throughout time. And, you know, I mean, yes, childhood has changed a lot because, you know, we could have whole discussion about the ways in which children were dealt with in, you know, something like the times of the Romans and beyond that. I mean, like, it's definitely changed, right? But I think what he seems to be saying here is that there is something that children are missing right now. And part of that has to do with the ability to just be kids and do kid stuff and to allow their imaginations to kind of run wild. And part of that has to do with it, you know, again, that can only happen if you're not constantly being entertained every second and your mind kind of is like, I'm bored. And then you got to think of something to do. You got to create something, right?
Or socialize, you know, meet exactly. other kids in person. Yeah. And I, you know, the other piece of this that I loved and I felt like I'm sure everybody probably picked up on was these things that could be key to bringing you back into that headspace as an adult that motivate you. So, you know, like we were saying earlier about her grandmother loving to dance, but she didn't really feel like it was relevant anymore to discuss with her granddaughter or her family or to try and do because, oh, I'm an old woman. But when she hears the right song and thinks no one's watching, suddenly she has to get up and dance. And remember, you know, that moment where she feels like she's in the zone and that's her thing. And it's the thing that really lights her up. And then the same thing with Jeremy, because his parents owned a bakery and he loved his parents so much. The smell and the sound of bee biting into a croissant brought him instantly back to being that little kid whose parents owned a bakery. And thinking about all the good times that he had and remembering his imaginary friend was Blue and getting that reassurance before going into this big meeting. And, you know, they didn't need to show a ton of other examples. I think these two were plenty, but also showing that every kid's motivation is different. So what worked for Jeremy may not work for somebody else. I thought was beautiful, and that was the tie that finally made them able to reconnect with their imaginary friend and technically then with their childhood was so sweet.
Yeah. No, I mean, 100%. I think you have really, you know, hit something on the head, which is, and I think the beauty of it was it's something that I think we've all experienced, right? There is that thing which all of a sudden happens, and it kind of brings you back to and reminds you of that thing from childhood that really captured your imagination or a sense of wonder. You know, it's in some ways, I think for me personally, it's actually when I see a really cool Lego set. I loved Lego as a kid. I still love Lego. I think it's incredibly interesting and super fun as a toy and a collectible and a thing to do. And one of the things I loved about it is that it it allowed my imagination to run wild and I could create my own things, you know, and it also helped me think spatially. And, you know, because to understand how to put Lego together, you have to understand how all the Lego pieces fit together, you know, and if you're building something that's not from the instructions, you have to have a good understanding about how all these pieces fit together and what they would look like then together for the ability to kind of like put something together that looks good. And so all of those things are things that I loved so much about that. And I still kind of almost have that sense of wonder when I see what somebody can create with Lego. It kind of brings me back to that kid, you know, because it is this kind of like joyous sense of, oh, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. You know, so to me that I get it. When you see this moment in each of these people's lives where they're kind of brought back, you know, I feel like that still happens to me every time I see a cool Lego set.
Oh yeah. Well, and you know, it's funny. I would say kind of the same thing for me with something a little bit different, but blueberries, you know, they seem so arbitrary. But for me, it was because one set of my grandparents had blueberry bushes my whole childhood. And we would go out regularly because you have to go out and harvest them. And there's hundreds to harvest. And I would go out with my grandmother and collect them all, bring them inside. And she made a blueberry streusel coffee cake with those blueberries fresh from their yard. And we would even eat a few covered in sugar while we were waiting for the cake to be done. And so this weekend, I actually made that cake that I've never made before in her memory for a family event with my mom and her siblings, and made sure that I let them know that that was why. And so for me, blueberries always remind me of picking blueberries with my grandmother.
That's super cool. That's, you know, it's funny because, yeah, you say that. And I was also thinking about how really big, like my grandmother, great grandmother was Sicilian, and, she used to make these delicious homemade meatballs. Ooh. That were huge. Like not
you just
the
need
normal
one.
Size, but I mean, like, yeah, exactly. And so every time I see a place that does those, I'm kind of reminded of her and watching her make them kind of thing. Aww. So, yeah, I mean, I think the movie does such a great job of reminding us as adults specifically, you know, that there are very important things that should not end just because we've grown up. And I also think that it's a movie that's clearly trying to say it. This is something that we should also not strip away from our children now, mm-hmm. You know, that it's important for them to go through, to get, to have. And so, yeah, I really love that. I was going to ask you, did you have a favorite if in the film?
Oh, that's hard because there were so many. I mean, I have to admit the marshmallow was hilarious.
Yeah.
So probably that either the marshmallow or the ice cube. Because the reason
was
the kid
funny.
Lived in Arizona and he was thirsty.
Yeah. That was really funny.
It's like, oh, you feel so like lackluster that was your reason for existence. So what about you?
You know, there are quite a few of them. Even though it doesn't actually have a lot to do, I loved the ghost that didn't have pants on. I thought that was funny. And
the one with the very regal name.
I was also, I thought that Brad Pitt as Keith, which is hilarious that Brad Pitt does the voice for him because like he barely says anything. But I just thought the whole idea of creating an invisible best friend was pretty funny. And so, yeah, I mean, in the end, I thought most of them were great. And, you know, I think this would have been a really hard part of the movie because, you know, you can't really create invisible friends that have anything to do with franchises, right? And so you have to come up with all of these kind of off the wall ideas. But in some ways, I also thought that that made it a little bit more fun and unique, right? And so, I mean, like the fact that blue is purple, but it's because Jeremy was colorblind, you know? And so when he saw him, he saw blue. And so I thought that was great. But yeah, I mean, I love them all, really. They were all pretty
funny.
And
I forgot to mention Cosmo, the super sleuth detective with an obscured face.
he was
probably
great.
The funniest one of all of them because he had so much to do. Like, I love that he drops off the top secret file and then falls out the window.
Yes. Yeah. And it was funny, too, that that's Christopher Maloney, who's been in, what is it, the Law and Order show, I think, forever. So, yeah, I thought that he did a great job. What did you think of Kaylee Fleming, who plays Bee? Because, you know, with any movie with a child star, I think it can be incredibly difficult, you know, if as an adult watching the film specifically, that you don't think that that child kind of really holds their own, especially against somebody like you've got Ryan Reynolds, John Krasinski, Fiona Shaw. So,
yeah, I'm actually there was one thing I wanted to throw out, too. Apparently, Bee is also the name of John Krasinski's family dog.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so I did not know that. That's fun.
But yeah, I thought Kaylee was actually amazing. I wasn't sure at first because you're obviously still getting to know the character. And she seemed very kind of apprehensive and quiet. But that's what she's portraying is this girl who has been through everything and just doesn't know who to be or how to be anymore. And the more she did, the more I loved her, and especially the scene where she's telling her father a story and she tears up. I mean, it got me. I was bawling in the theater. So, yeah, I think she's really surprised me and can go on to do amazing things. What did you think?
No, I agree with you. I thought that she did great in the movie. And I really enjoyed her performance. You know, I enjoyed the way in which she does a good job, I think, of playing kind of flabbergasted and like not really sure what to think about everything that's happening. But like you mentioned, I think one of the things that she does really well, too, is all of the emotional moments, you know, when she realizes, you know, who Ryan Reynolds' character Cal is, you know, when she remembers finally, you know, her interactions with her dad, like you said, especially there at the end when she's telling him her story of what's been happening to her. You know, I thought all of that was great. And, you know, again, it's one of those things where I do think as well, when you have a director like a John Krasinski who has daughters, I have no doubt that his ability then to kind of get out of her what he needs for the scene has got to be there. So, you know, I have to give him credit for her performance as well. And that's great. I mean, I think that's an incredibly difficult thing to be able to do is to get, you know, good performances out of child actors. But I think he does a really great job. So,
well, and to have that kind of connection with each other, since he's also in the movie, for him to be able to direct, but then also for them to be able to connect and come off earnestly as father and daughter on screen. I think they had to be able to work well together, and she did well playing off of him.
Yeah, I agree. we've seen Ryan Reynolds in plenty of roles, and you know, I don't know if he does anything here that he hasn't done before. But I did think that it was interesting in some ways to me that, you know, with him being Cal, I did feel that there was a restraint in him to not go too far, you know, with his kind of Ryan Reynolds sense of humor. It did feel as though what he was doing was meant to fit what the film needed and not just him trying to be, you know, as funny as humanly possible, basically. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he's also a parent, and I think you can see that more on screen here and in, you know, when we watch The Adam Project. Really can tell by the way that he is acting with Kaylee that he's trying to get that across, and, you know, how he would feel that a parent would work with their daughter. And that's kind of what he wants Cal to portray as a character, and that you're getting out of him here. And I think it's so sweet because it's not immediately clear that he's her imaginary friend. You think maybe he's just someone that's there as a guide trying to put this whole agency together to match the imaginary friends with new kids. And so as time goes on, I'm glad that it becomes more and more clear. And then they finally actually show him in the outfit that mentally she had put him in as a kid. So I do agree. I think that he did well with reining it in of not being like the Deadpool Ryan Reynolds. And certainly that kind of thing wouldn't fit here. But also still being funny when it was warranted. You know, I'm thinking of her imagination changing all the scenery in the retirement home. He was still very funny and, you know, acted the crap out of it. But within the confines of what we're trying to do. So I thought he was good. I think that he was a good choice and played it earnestly, but also toned down.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he was really good in the role. I think he works really well. I will say for myself, you know, I kept thinking to myself, okay, when are they just going to reveal that he's her imaginary friend?
Oh, you did?
But it didn't ruin anything for me because I think it doesn't necessarily really matter because the journey is about B's journey to realizing that, mm-hmm. not the audience necessarily, you know?
Right.
And what you need to go through is B's journey to get to that point. And so I didn't really think that it necessarily mattered if it was a surprise to you or not, because then what you're paying attention to, again, I think is more her story, which is really what this movie is all about. And so, you know, what can you say about John Krasinski that hasn't been said before and other things? I think he's fantastic. I love that, you know, he gave himself a small role in the movie, and, you know, his role really here is about being a father who is trying to raise a daughter to not be completely drowned by the experiences that she's gone through, to help her see that life still has so much to offer, even with all the sadness she's already experienced. And, you know, I think he does a wonderful job of that. And he's just so incredibly likable and watchable that, you know, I was glad I didn't, because, you know, he's not in the previews at all, which is great. I think it's one of those things about the film is you're not coming into this realizing that he's actually going to be in the movie. And I think that's an incredibly good idea, because you didn't want him detracting from the rest of the film by people just thinking about, oh, what's he going to be doing in the film? Because the movie is not really about him. And then I think so it was great, the part that he played. And as always, I think he does a good job. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. he's so good in everything he does, honestly.
Well, and then he made this for his kids. And so I think he rightfully so. I'm glad you mentioned he wasn't in the previews. I think that was a good idea. and that he knew that he would be wanting to make a statement to his own kids, and that's maybe why he included himself as the father here, was to be the character giving some advice. And it was so sweet, and just he comes across always very genuine and soft-spoken and kind, but with something meaningful to say. And even just the expression on his face, he's so good at knowing how to get an emotion across in expressions easily. I mean, that's why we all knew him so well from The Office. You know, he could just turn to the camera and make a face and you knew immediately what he was trying to say. He's so funny. But here, I mean, pulled on the heartstrings constantly in the best way.
Agreed. Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that's kind of fun in the film is to see Fiona Shaw be Bee's grandmother, who, you know, most people just think of her as Aunt Petunia from Harry Potter, really. And of course, she plays an incredibly terrible person in that. Mm-hmm. And so to watch her here to play this loving, kind grandmother who's not necessarily quite sure how to help her granddaughter feel more comfortable in this situation and yet is doing everything she can, I thought was great. And then, of course, like you mentioned, the moment where, you know, she gets reacquainted with her imaginary friend through the dance sequence was so well played. And so, great casting there, because, it is one of those things where, you're really able to see the range of what somebody can do. And I think she does a wonderful job in the film.
Yeah, I can't help but agree. I think even the little moments that they give away the kind of person she's playing, of when she makes pancakes unexpectedly, but she burnt them, or she left the paint supplies out like a good grandmother would do, and then gets told, oh, I'm too old for that, I don't do that anymore. But, you know, just simply responds, oh, totally, of course, and puts it away. She's playing very sweet and just doing her best to make Bee comfortable and try to help her through things, but just kind of being unsure of what the best way is. I think she's a great presence, and definitely a lot different than we've seen her in other things. Maybe a little bit more similar to like what she played with Andor, but
yes,
was cool to see her in this role.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm so glad you mentioned her role in Andor, because I think that is very much more what we've got here for her. And I think Alan Kim, we didn't get to see him a ton as Benjamin, the boy that Bee meets in the hospital, but he's so adorable. So adorable. And honestly, if there's anything about the film, I almost just wish he was in it more, because he really is so cute. And I loved their interactions, and all I wanted was more.
And for him to get his correct imaginary friend that matched him best, I was so excited to finally see the dragon that was like his little clay figure that flew over and sat with him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, 100%.
Yep.
Well, I did want to ask you, so this movie, I think, is, for me personally, is very much helped by the fact that Michael Giacchino does the music and creates this wonderfully whimsical theme, and the themes for the film are just so beautiful, and so childlike and so pure sounding. It just brings the movie to life for me in a way that I was so glad that he did the film. And this is where I think one of the places he's so good at doing this, like, he's done this so many times in Pixar films, you know, I think of like Up, mm-hmm. Or I believe he did Inside Out as well. And so he just has a way of kind of capturing that childlike spirit in music. I thought he did a great job here.
That's exactly the thing I was going to say to you. I think he knows his audience, and it's almost like he's getting back into his own mindset of being a child and what that feels like to have that sense of wonder and that innocence and joy again. I think it definitely comes through throughout the movie and the music. and fits so well, I think, you know, like we said, especially the scene where grandmother is dancing, or, you know, where people are reconnecting with their imaginary friends in general. Even, you know, in the sad scenes, I think that it just has such an emotional depth to them in every song. I think it's just very well done.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. One thing I wanted to ask you before we got to the ratings. You know, this movie is, I think, a film which is completely family friendly and basically good for almost anyone of all ages, right? And I get this feeling as though it just seems like, right, that we just don't get a lot of these movies made anymore that really are truly going for the entire family. I mean, sometimes even animated movies don't even feel like that anymore. And, you know, there's a part of me that was incredibly sad to see that this movie, you know, wasn't doing better at the box office. I don't know. I just wondered what your thoughts on that were. Is it just that people just are so used to, you know, having their kids watch something on streaming, why would this not be a bigger hit? I don't know. I don't get it.
I wondered if maybe it just wasn't quite as punchy, I guess, as something like maybe the Trolls movies were. I'm thinking traditionally of what I've seen did very well with kids movies, and Trolls was one of them, I think, because it was a lot of super bright colors, pop songs, and super like exciting, joyful trailers. And I think this is a little more subdued than that. It still has some bright colors and things going on and some secrets that they then give away later in the movie and not in the trailer, but I think maybe just doesn't come across as exciting as something like that, maybe. But still worthwhile. So, I mean, I think maybe it's going to just take more good reviews to push it out for more people to go see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think... And I don't know. And it could be, again, maybe we've just trained people to see family movies at home, but then family movies seem to also sometimes do really well at the box office. Mm-hmm. I mean, a few weeks ago, The Phantom Menace was re-released in theaters, and for 2 weeks in a row, I believe, it was number two at the box office, because there just wasn't a lot of family stuff out there. You know, you see something like, Kung Fu Panda 4, and I think it's made $193 million. And maybe you're right. I don't know. Maybe it's also just that we've trained kids to only watch flashy, really bright colored, obnoxious things these days. Again, I was just so struck by how fun and imaginative this film is. It's fresh in the sense that it's not based on some sort of franchise, you know, and it's teaching good things, you know. So it just almost seemed like the thing that you would want to take your family to. So hopefully, you know, people listening to this, you know, if they haven't done so, they will. And I guess, Christy, maybe what they need most is just our ratings so they know whether or not this is worth their time. And so, Christy, what would you rate if?
I would rate if 4 out of 5 bananas with no pants. Because, I mean, first of all, why does a banana need pants? It's a fruit. They don't have anything to worry about. But I think that it was so fun where it needed to be, but really taught thoughtful lessons and still had something great to represent as a kid's movie. I think it also has a lot for adults to take out of it as well. So I think that they really found a fine line here of something that appeals to both audiences, but is not going to have adult humor in a kid's movie. So this is not a Shrek. This is its own thing. And like you said, you know, it still had good lessons. So 4 out of 5 for me. And would also love to end this with, did you have an imaginary friend? Because I will go ahead and give it away and say I did, because I was an only child till I was almost 5. And then my sister was finally born. I had an imaginary monkey named Mr. Nelson, and we used to have tea.
Ooh. Okay.
Because I loved the Jungle
that
Book.
That is fascinating. That is fascinating. So I'll answer your question first. I did not have an imaginary friend that I remember. And though for me, I would give this, I believe I'll give this 4 out of 5 imaginary friends as burning marshmallows, because this was just such a fun movie, and it really is one of those films where I do hope that more people will take their kids to see. I think, you know, this is the type of cinema that we should be getting behind, right? Movies that are incredibly well thought out, and are also movies that are good for the entire family, and aren't just remakes or, you know, just a rehash of something that everybody's seen before. And so I hope that everybody will go check out If. But Christy, if people wanted to catch up what's going on with you, where would they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd at Bespin Bell. And I'll make sure I go on and rate this on Letterboxd. And of course on Facebook as well under my name, Christy. And of course a finished podcast that I had called Sabers and Spells with my friends Amanda and Teresa over on the Skywalking Through Neverland Network. And what about you?
Well, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network talking about all things Star Trek outside the 602 Club on the Warp 5, the Orb, the Artificial Tango, Saddle Up, and sometimes on Literary Treks. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with 2 shows. One is completed. It's called Outpost. That's with Drea Kaufman talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then you'll also find me doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week. But thank you so much for joining us.
And y'all come back now, you hear.